Greetings, listeners of The Instance. Welcome back to The Instance. I'm Scott Johnson, and I am fresh off of an airplane. And I just flew here from Anaheim, California. We just finished up BlizzCon. It was one hell of a BlizzCon, as you probably noticed at home. Many of you watched our live panel that we did for the community track on Saturday. If you didn't see that and you have the virtual ticket, it's still up there in archive form. Just click on the community tab over there on the virtual ticket page. But for those who don't have that, and I know that a bunch of you don't, I was able to record it and share it with you here. So this is audio from that event. And don't worry, you're not missing out on too much. It's, you know, four people sitting in chairs or in stools in front of an audience. The content is what matters. We had Chris Robinson with us, who was utterly fantastic. You'll hear that for yourselves here shortly. But anyway, I wanted to make sure to get this to you guys as soon as possible. So please enjoy this. We'll be back Friday, regular scheduled time, with a brand new episode where we really break down what we saw at BlizzCon 2017. But this should definitely tide you over till then. Thank you everyone who came out to see us, and everybody who watched at home, and everyone who listens now. It means a lot. We'll see you on the other side.
Wow, thank you guys for that introduction. I assume we've got a few Instance fans in the audience today.
So Scott is really nervous, so if you could laugh at everything he said,
right,
it would be great.
Make sure to do that.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to be here. We're so grateful that Blizzard asked us to do this and to come be a part of this opportunity. And I should waste no time in introducing who's up here. I'm Scott Johnson, the host of The Instance. We are now 12 years into that show. Thank you. And I have some of us up here with us. Some of us couldn't be here, so a quick shout out to the following people who are not on that stage but probably should be. Terpster, who's in England. Bills, who's back home in Texas. Randy Jordan, who's working the floor over there someplace. Andrew Konietzky, all those guys, you deserve to be up here with us. But instead, let me introduce who's with us today. So again, I'm Scott, sitting right here. It's my good friend, he is his scarves, Patrick from France, my co-host. Give him a big welcome. Next to him, we have a pinch hitter who I could not have been happier to have say yes to this opportunity. You guys know the CTR Guild, you know the CTR Party, you know the CTR community. In fact, many of us are part of that same community. Welcome Pat Crane to the stage.
Everybody.
And finally, I'm very excited about this. Blizzard has made it possible for us to have someone here I've been geeking out about all weekend. Welcome to the show, Art Director for World of Warcraft, Chris Robinson. Thank you for being here.
Hey, man, thank you so much. I'm super honored to be here. This is awesome.
It's great. I tried really hard the last couple of days to not have just questions about drawing things.
But that's what they've all been about. So it's all,
we kind of got them all out, too, in the back. We talked for like an hour, and so we're done talking about it.
There you go. But he's definitely got a hand on just about everything that happens in World of Warcraft. And boy, did a lot of things happen with World of Warcraft tomorrow. Or yesterday.
Or tomorrow.
And tomorrow, every day.
Yeah,
I'm a time lord. I'm admitting it now on stage in front of everybody. Oh, and hello to everybody at home. I know we have a lot of people watching there as well. We'll get started by trying to break apart a little bit what happened yesterday. And specifically, I think we would be remiss if we didn't begin discussing that cinematic.
Oh, so good.
Ooh.
So good.
I don't know if, did any of you guys see it? It was pretty good.
I couldn't see it. I was crying so much. I was just like, oh, this is so good.
Yeah.
So good.
And I couldn't help but think, I mean, even though you guys see a lot of things internally and you guys get to see different versions before the final, from animatics all the way up to finished product, I still see Twitter and other places where Blizzard people are freaking out.
Yeah.
You still feel the feeling, right?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, that team is... So we're development, and cinematics works really closely with us. But we see it, you know, throughout that whole process. And I was in love with it 10 versions ago, right? Before like all the surfacing and all the polish got on it. And so now, you know, we see it right before we come here, and it's like blows our minds. But to see it here in this element on the big screen and to see people react to it is, yeah, I mean, you think you were crying. My eyes were sweating like crazy.
So now were you watching the audience during the cinematic, just trying to gauge the reaction and not watching the cinematic at all? Because you've probably seen it a bunch, right?
Both, right? Like watching the cinematic, but it's more of...
Then you're just watching like everybody's like wet eyes, and like the mad cry faces and stuff like that? That's awesome.
It's a feel thing, you know? Like it's less watching and more just being in that, like I love to be in the center of the crowd when that stuff happens and just feel the energy around you of the excitement of what people are thinking.
Like that cinematic specifically, like you have this super powerful banshee Sylvanas in the beginning where
so good
and like so good. All of the horde people in the audience were losing their minds, and I have to admit, yeah, there's a few here, and I am an Alliance person. Yes! Yes! So I was like, I have to admit,
Horde.
I was like, you know, they were after that thing, I was like, seeing her go full banshee and like the Sour Fang taking the Horde banner and going like, oh, and I was like, yes, for the, I mean, yeah, it was okay. It was fine. And I was hoping for that, you know, the equivalent in the Alliance, on the Alliance side, and I was like, what can they do that is gonna be as impactful? And when Manduin shows up, he really is Manduin.
Yeah,
he's really actually became a full-grown hero general, and you see on his face like he wants to do the thing, but he doesn't want to go at war because that's not who he is. But he has to because of, and like his face. How much time did you spend like on each twitchy part of each? Like it seems like it would take a full lifetime to do that.
Yeah, well, so I mean, that's, you know, there's an incredibly talented team of people who are dedicated to doing that. You know, we see it throughout the process, and the fun part for us is the conversations that we have about the intricacies of expression, right? Like, and you gotta think about like Anduin's in this amazing point in his life, and he grew up for us through that process. Like we didn't go into it knowing exactly how he was gonna turn out when you saw him in the final cinematic. We had all these conversations about like, how old is he now? And, you know, using reference from real world scenarios and other things that we see, like kind of coming up with like our ideal version of where he's at. He's, you know, his dad just died, man. He's like, he's grieving the loss of his father. He's becoming a man, but he doesn't even have time to do that. He has to be a king now, right? Like, so he didn't have time to go through the process of like, getting into like, taking those shoes on. He's just
He looks like a baby, like he's old.
Well, you look old in the mirror, so you can't count that. But here's the thing I noticed about Anduin and his face. I mean, first of all, I've never been a big Anduin fan, but the cinematic made me a huge Anduin fan, and I think it's for this reason. They captured artistically, stylistically, and realistically the expressions one would make when one has to step up at a moment of real importance.
Yeah.
Like, I think we can all relate to this feeling of, it's my time now, I'm not really totally ready for this. I'm half crying, I'm half overwhelmed, but I'm with myself enough to know that this sword, my father's sword, is not gonna be enough. It's not gonna win this war. Shunk, and he has to call on the light, he has to be a priest.
Right.
He has to do the thing he knows the best that makes him so cheap in Hearthstone, he has to do that. And that is not easy. We're not talking about a movie. We're talking about an animated, handcrafted piece of work. And that's incredible to me that those emotions were conveyed so well.
Well, you're capturing the moment that he realizes that he has to follow his own path, right? And I think what's cool about watching WoW grow as a game and a community has been those moments where we've started to go away from these big bombastic explosive, you know, scenarios in our pre-renders, and we've come to the point now where it's so character-driven. And this one for me was not just with Anduin, but with Sylvanas, everyone like capturing like what's really going on in their head. I mean, Sylvanas is such a complex character, and you can't just have her going, you know, crazy while Anduin's kind of having this very special moment. So you know, those were the conversations that were most meaningful. Like, we'd watch it over and over and over again and just be like, what's going on in his head, and are we really capturing that moment how we should be?
It's really something. I mean, for me to explain that cinematic to somebody who isn't us, it's kind of hard. My mom would watch that and go, so the blue lady did a thing, and right. For some reason the kid can make gnomes. Like, she wouldn't know this from any other sort of fantasy. But what it felt like was a love letter to us as players. They know we love these characters. They know how invested we are in these characters. And it just felt like, I mean, I've loved every cinematic. It was a nice reminder during the classic servers announcement to see the old cinematic and right. go, oh, that still holds up.
Yeah.
But to see also how far it's come and where we're at now. I mean, we all ask this every year, why aren't they making movies and TV shows? And I'll keep asking it, and they'll probably never do it. But it's so good. It's so good. So, grats to that team, to you guys.
Yeah, they're amazing, man. Leadership. Thank you. That classic cinematic is, you know, speaking of things that just draw tears, like, when we watched that for the first time, like, for me, it was watching, you know, almost 11 years of my life summed up in under, like, you know, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And that is, and the just, because it brings up all those emotions as a player, as a, you know, somebody who's making the game, like what we were thinking at the time and like how the story was developing, and then rewinding it is literally like watching your life flash before your eyes before you, like, you know, die or whatever. But it was a pretty incredible experience to see and look back, because there's so many things we forget and we're like, oh yeah, man, like that moment and that moment and that moment. Right. It's really cool.
Yeah, and you've been in this position since Burning Crusade?
Yeah, so right as we started working on the Draenei and Blood Elf models is when I came in to work on World of Warcraft.
Wow. Now, so that leads me to, I want to talk about environments for a second. Ooh, yeah. We've only got brief looks at these new zones for both Horde and Alliance. Both look great, I can't wait. I'm a little partial to deserts and dirty, grimy stuff. Many of you know reasons why, we won't have to get into those here.
Let's not talk about your personal
life. No, yeah, yeah. Right. I like Mad Max Fury Road, that's it. So, thank you. But, so those immediately appealed to me. The Alliance zones look really great as well. But there was something I noticed in kind of the fade in, fade outs. Here's a mountainous scene. Here are some creatures grazing. There's kind of a, for lack of a better word, a more volumetric approach, or a more, not realistic so much. What did you say yesterday? You had it summed up pretty well.
Really?
Yeah, you said.
So it was the panoramas that you see, especially on the Alliance zones in the expansion, they feel like, it's like the foliage, and it feels a little bit almost like Pixar-y quality, but it's in-game stuff. Like, I just want to go and explore them. It feels like you've past something, like the ones from the previous expansion were really good, but now there's no polygons. It feels like you can go from concept
very
art to in-game art much more fluidly. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
but
I know.
Like,
what
you
you're
can
saying.
Get what you were imagining.
What was in there? The game. It does feel like something got leaped over. Are we just seeing the best possible camera angle, or is there a jump?
No, I mean, I hope not. Like, I hope it looks like that. Wherever you go, but man, you know, this is like a three-hour answer, so I'll try to sum it up succinctly. But there's technical things, right? Like, if you look out at some of those panoramas, it used to be that when we fog things out in the distance, you need to, like, you imagine a invisible sphere around your character that goes out a certain distance, and everything in that sphere fogs evenly. So whether I'm looking up or down or straight across.
View distance, they'll understand view distance.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Used to be terrible. Remember those days?
Yeah, exactly. So, and that was like an even gradient of fog, right? So at a certain point, it fogs all the way out, and from this point on, it starts and goes to the full fog. Well, we just got the ability to now have low-lying fog. So when you look out across those vistas, you can see, you know, like a building sticking up out of the fog, or mountains and small like features like trees. That's something that like seems super minor, but psychologically, we're used to seeing that visual cue in movies and pop culture, to where it kind of tells a story of like, this is a creepy cemetery, or, you know, this is like a foggy morning, and we couldn't do that before, whereas we can now. So there's a lot of technical things that happen like that. They're kind of small steps along the way to build to the bigger picture. For me, and most interestingly from an aesthetic, artistic perspective, it's, we have a team of, our team is as big as it's ever been now. It's almost 100 people. We're about 97 artists. Wow. A lot of those artists are people who grew up playing WoW in their families. Like they, you know, their parents introduced them to the game early on. They went to art school, graduated, and now they come in and they bring this background, which makes me feel like I'm 97 years old, by the way. 97
years old. Can we stop for a second and realize how crazy that
isn't
is?
Isn't that cool? Like
they grew up on the game, yeah, and now right. They come and work for the. It's
does it continue the tradition that I've always believed that Blizzard is? I've said this so many times, so this is a little rote for me. But Blizzard is so much artists before it's anything else. It always has been for me. When it comes to, you know, they start with some sort of concept, and then it goes to approvals, and then there's 3D things made, and people are doing stuff out of clay, and then it gets scanned in, and then they're being made into models, and then they're animating them, and they're being iterated the entire time. It feels like it really doesn't get, I know it gets technical earlier than this, but it feels like it's art, technical. Is that true?
That sounds awesome. I wish it was art. It's, you know, we have a cornerstone that's gameplay first, and that has a lot of different definitions, but I think, you know, universally we tend to agree that it really means that whether it's art or design or engineering or production, we all have the goal of doing what's best for the game and for the gameplay experience. So fortunately, you know, working at Blizzard really is a lot of places, you know, design won't make changes based on artistic requests, right? Like there's a goal that they have in mind, and we need to hit that. And until we hit it, we just keep iterating. Whereas at Blizzard, it certainly feels and has been for a long time, as long as I've been there, a super creative process and collaborative process where there's a lot of back and forth, and everyone works towards that communal goal, and you can feel it's tangible. Mm. Just to go back really quick. The development that you see, the visual style of the zones or characters, any assets that we built for the game, it really is just the fact that we have all of these people now who like grew up on the game or are, you know, have been here from the beginning. And I can't underscore enough that it's not the vision of one person. Like I you know, as much as I possibly can say this, I'm not like the visionary of WoW. The visionary of WoW is the team. It's design, it's art, it's, you know, the hundreds of people who make the game, the thousands of people who support it, thousands of people who make it for that matter. And, you know, it really comes down to just like this communal passion that everyone has, and that's what's tangible. Like if you come onto the floor, we get in very heated discussions about things that would seem very minor to you know, your average person, but to us means so much because every little detail counts. Mm.
Something like, you know, okay, we're making snake people with feet, so why don't Naga have feet? Is that the discussions that you get into, that type of thing?
Sure, yeah, or like, you know, like I think the recent one was like, we originally weren't going to put tails on the Volpera, and like that, there was some serious back and forth of like, it was a huge hit. I mean, you can imagine, it's like just throw a tail on it, no big deal. But you take in an animation and testing and all the things that have to go into it. It's literally thousands of hours that you're adding to, you know, an NPC character that is part of the experience. But is it as important as much time as we're going to put into it? Like that's debatable. And we debate it at great length.
Well, would you argue that you guys have gotten to the point where there's more cohesion, though? Like, you now know that a tail means these other things. It isn't just a visual flourish. It's these technical issues. So you may come in either with a better plan for a tail, or it's just a stub, like a,
yeah,
you know? Like a Pandaren, they got the little butthole thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyway,
right.
You know what I mean? But you can make those decisions, those determinations ahead of time, so you're not compromising your vision so much as you are aligning with what you know is going to be the process. That seems really important.
It's totally. Like, we knew we didn't want to give the Vipera a butthole, so.
Wow. I'm glad we got into this discussion.
I am too.
I'm really happy.
Well,
about
really,
it.
Who didn't think we would?
We're really doing it up at BlizzCon.
Well, that's awesome. So the new zones, specifically for Horde and Alliance, it's a bit of a different process this expansion in terms of where we're all going. Some episodes on The Instance ago, I don't remember who said it, might have been me, but we were talking about how cool it would be if the team was able to say, only Horde can go here, only Alliance can go here, and let's have two very special faction-based experiences, but then open it up later so you can go do stuff. And that's exactly what they've done. So we called it, basically. But my
humble brag.
My question to you would be, of these, let's talk about Kul Tiras. That is a beautiful place. And I'm a little bummed I'm not Alliance or have a main Alliance tune.
You can switch anytime.
Sure,
Scott. I mean,
sure.
It's fine.
You guys, some of you people that follow Pat don't know he's got a dirty Horde character. He comes and raids with us.
I do. Okay. I play both sides.
This is all good. This is all part of the expansion this year. We have to have lots of divisions between us. Just in the game, though. but that place is really pretty. And I wonder, how much do you have, how much do you oversee with that? Do you have approval on how that place looks, or that, or the Zandalar zones, and how they play out, and how important is it that they adhere to a certain aesthetic?
So basically, they build it up for like 6 months, they show it to you, and you're like, no, that's crap, yeah. Just do it again.
I like to come that's in works, as right? late in the process as possible so that I can cause as much rework as possible.
Right. Right.
No, I mean, I have like the easiest approval job in the world, right? Like, like I said, I mean, these artists that are working on this stuff, they know the game inside and out. They love it, they play it, they breathe it, they're passionate about it. We fight Horde and Alliance constantly at work in a very healthy way, but. So I'll go in and I'll approve things, but it's most of the time I'm just looking for something to say, right? Like, yeah. Like I should probably do my job and right. comment on this, but it looks beautiful. Like, can we make the roofs greener?
Yeah, it is hard. I'm guessing it's hard because you don't want to. You want to give feedback, or you want to give proper reaction, or whatever that may be in the circumstance. But also, you don't want to just make a thing up just to be contrary. So that must be weird sometimes. I mean, do you ever, as an artist, do you ever just go into an empty room and draw on a piece of paper and say, ah, finally, I can draw again?
Yeah, I get like a day out of a month that I'll go and draw. No, but I mean, you know, I try to contribute in little places and like plug in here and there, do like a vision piece here and there, just kind of give it to the team to do with what they want. But, you know, the cool thing about the WoW art team as well is that like everyone kind of has a speciality. Like there are, you know, dungeon artists or character artists or animators. And it's super low ego. So for me, I just have this team of 97 amazing human beings who I can learn from every day. And when I interact with them, it's more on the level of like, wow, how did you paint that? Like that texture looks totally like in line with WoW, and it works, but you've brought in, you know, a new aesthetic, a new way of like adding tertiary color or, you know, more color depth that we haven't really seen before. And brush sharing is a big thing. Like with Photoshop, you know, we'll have big conversations about like, how did you get that certain texture? And it's, I made this brush or I found this brush and share all those things around. So, you know, it's not so much like I'm this evil overlord who comes in and like squashes things or approve things. I'm just like kind of along for this really awesome ride.
Are the UI people the saddest? And here's what I want to ask. Okay? Not that they do amazing work, but this is the problem. They make these beautiful accented dragon corners on the default UI, or they build awesome frame containers for rating, and they do all these nifty UI elements, and they've gotten better and better every year. But then some bozo out in the community makes a mod and just covers all that up. That just seems like a bummer.
Yeah.
And that's the show, everybody. Yeah. All right, that's...
I'm really glad I asked that.
You pretty much summed it up. Yeah.
That has been in my head for years about every time I load them on, I go, oh, how's that guy feel for... Well, specifically to these zones and their themes, where's the inspiration coming from for the Horde side of stuff? Obviously, it's very troll-driven and very sort of Incan Mayan tradition. Anything else there you can tell us about why that feels so lush and lived in?
So, you know, interestingly, we've had a shift in the way that we approach zone creation. And if you remember, even not too long ago, two or three expansions ago, you'd be flying over like a mountain and there'd be a very abrupt color change in the textures, you know, like one area is very orange rock and the next is like very gray or blue. And that's bothered us. I mean, that's bothered me since day one. And it's been something we continually talk about, like how do we have very visually distinct zones without making it feel awkward when you transfer from one to the other. So this time specifically, and with having, you know, very faction specific continents that we're working on, we had discussions really early on about not just like the natural environments that we were going to be seeing and experiencing, but very specifically how the cultures that we find in those areas are going to impact the environments and how the environments are going to impact the cultures. So, you know, if you look at Zandalar and the city of Zul'Dazar and the trolls, there are some environments that just naturally and kind of inherently fit really well with that culture kit. And we've seen a lot of that, right? We've seen a lot of troll ruins in the game, and this was our opportunity to really go, okay, well, let's not just rework what we've done, let's reverse engineer that and take hits from the things that we know to be troll and the architecture that we know to be troll, but this is our opportunity to really show that empire at its height, right? Like, with dinosaurs, which always makes everything, you know.
Dinosaurs do make everything better, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, we all saw that big, tall, walking one, and all we could say was, I don't know how much gold that's going to cost, but
yeah.
I just bought that thing in Pandaria. I don't think I have the money, but I want it real
you
bad.
You knew you shouldn't have.
I know I want it. Go ahead.
How deep do you go into that reverse engineering? Like, do you imagine the lives of the denizens? And like, oh, that's Bob. His wife works at the thing. And like,
yeah, but you know Bob the Troll, right?
Bob the Troll, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, totally, man. Like, that's the cool part. You know, we sit and we have a lot of discussions about why did this empire fall apart the way that it did? Like, why has it been aged the way that it has? And like, what is the significance of some of the markings that we've seen on ruins around these areas? How does it relate to every troll culture? And how does that relate to the one that we're experiencing now? Those are great. I mean, we jam on that stuff for hours just to make sure that we're covering our asses primarily, but like.
That must be so hard to coordinate across like all the teams and the I imagine there it's different teams that work on the Horde and Alliance zones or like, and then you have the gameplay people and like, how do you even make all of this work together? I guess that's a different question, but.
So the team makes, like there's no specific Horde or Alliance team. Otherwise I think we'd have people actively attacking each other.
That'd be great.
Some zones would get done and others wouldn't. But everybody, you know, there's an environment team and they make all the environments. So they'll share and move back and forth from one to another, work with each other, share assets. It's really just kind of, you know, to speak to what we were talking about earlier, we take a look at the story that we want to tell. And we talk about like biomes, right? We really know we want to do a jungle biome. We know we want to do a desert. We know we want to do a swamp or whatever it might be. And then the intricacy of the conversation or the really important part is, how do we translate the information of the culture kit in every one of those biomes in a way that makes it fresh and new, but it feels like a cohesive experience?
So this last expansion had a feature to it that seemed like a lot of work, and that was artifact weapons and their skins. And it wasn't just the initial batch, there were some that came later. I think people like that, right? You're really into the skins and unlocking them, it's a good system. But it did feel like that was a lot of work for a lot of artists to sort of work on. This one's got basically one new artifact, quote unquote artifact, the neck piece, and there's less to worry about there. I got the overall impression yesterday that was probably amplified by the fact that we had a full-blown cinematic that we usually don't get for another 6 months, that you guys are like ahead of schedule. Now, this may be way inside baseball, but are you guys, it feels to me like you guys are on a brand new production, awesome track, and that you're way ahead, and for all we know, the next expansion's already well underway. It's inside stuff, so you don't have to answer all that, but it.
No, has to answer that. He has to answer that, please.
Specific even to your team and to those who work with you, it does feel like you guys are way out there, like way ahead.
So we were backstage, and I'm like, are you guys going to ask me like hard questions? I'm like, no, we'll just ask about art stuff. And now he jumps me when we're on stage and I can't run away.
Of course. There he goes.
I think we're on schedule, I hope. We as the team grows, we grow our production team. We have an amazing group of producers who, they're the ones that need to be flexible when we come to them and say, hey, we've spent 6 months on something and we feel like it just doesn't fit right now. And we're going to save it for a future experience, for instance, or maybe not, but we really need to shift tracks and start on something new now. And their job is to then take all of these cats that are running in every different direction and reherd them to work with what we want to do. So I would
Sounds
attribute
super
that
fun.
To,
oh, like, super fun.
I do not know how they do their job, but it's impressive. And it really, to their credit, I feel like we were able to come to BlizzCon this year with a very good foot forward. You know, like it didn't feel like, oh, we're not ready yet. I don't want to show that. There's gray assets. It really was polished to a level where I was very proud of what we had to show.
Yeah.
Well, and it's really it impressive. Seems like with Legion, everybody knows that the content came out really, really specific. I mean, it was you guys were on a tight schedule with everything. And I'm kind of curious, what did you guys learn along the way? And more importantly, can we expect that same kind of thing, maybe not the same timing, but that same kind of thing moving into the as we move into the next expansion?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect we're learning from that, right? So
yeah.
Pretty happy with the cadence. And certainly we're going to take notes from what we feel like went well and what didn't go well and adjust to that. But I think it's probably going to be similar, right?
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah,
I'm asking you. I don't know.
I would love that. That would be awesome.
If everything's like Legion moving forward in terms of, you use the word cadence, it's a good word for that, that rhythm of content release, what kind of stuff it is, the level of story we got, the crossover story we're getting now, That could be expansions forever, and I'd be happy.
It'd be great.
It'd be great.
Well, that's the plan, I think.
I think that's the plan. Yeah.
I mean, has that put a lot of stress on your? I mean, I'm guessing that puts a lot of stress on your team, just having that kind of timeline.
So it's actually kind of the opposite in that we now it's more tangible.
Awesome.
Right? Like we know. Okay, we really know when we're gonna come out with this content, and it allows us to scope to that. Mm-hmm. And to really take a look at what are the big hits that we need to do and what are the things that we would like to do and kind of find a good balance of where we cut that line off knowing when that next piece of content is going to go out.
So yeah, there's two new features in the game that I want to throw them to you guys first about the gameplay ramifications, but I am so curious about how one of them is possible with the art team. So. It's not a hard one, I promise. But we have Warfronts and Island Expeditions coming to the game. Specifically, Island Expeditions sound great. They're basically the what feel like to me the ultimate evolution. Sorry, Abathur fans, I didn't mean to say it that way. An evolution, let's say, of the scenarios that we started with in Pandaria, and those have seen some changes over time. Got a lot of them in the beginning, not so much in Warlords, and a little bit of things here and there in Legion. But these feel like a more dynamic form of that. Three, you and your two friends, you go in, you do a bunch of rad stuff, and to top it off, there's a little Diablo thrown in there. There's some randomization. So next time you go to that island, it A, may not be in the same place it was before, and C, it's full of weird stuff that wasn't there before, as they explained on the stage yesterday, which is super fascinating. It sounds like a really fun gameplay mechanic. So I'm really excited, but I'm curious what you think that's gonna do to the game. You know, there's a tendency for some players to go, oh, sounds like another gimmicky thing, or, you know, we'll do that once and never want to do it again. I'm convinced it's where I'm going to spend 90% of my time getting Azerite, but I'm curious what you guys think, and then I want to talk about the art of those islands.
I think the expeditions are they're either going to be awesome, or they're not going to work out, and I suspect Blizzard wouldn't put them out if they weren't going to work out. Right. Because they seem like an essential part of, it's one of the big features of the new expansion. And the fact that you can do them with just three people, no role, you can go in and get some of your Azerite is fun already. But then you have all of that element of the mobs are much smarter and they do things differently. They were talking about, I don't know if you guys saw that deep dive panel, but they were talking about Jim the Rogue, was it? Or Bob the Rogue, I don't know, apparently he's not a troll anymore.
Right.
Sneaky Pete. It was Pete.
Sneaky Pete.
So he would you engage the boss and Sneaky Pete shows up and he like saps your healer and runs away laughing. And like that's a really different way of approaching a PvE encounter. But you add on top of that the possibility of doing the PvE part, the PvP part. Where you're racing with a horde team, because obviously you're playing Alliance.
Right, of course.
And they're going to be, you know, messing up your thing. So I think it's going to be a much deeper, like saying it's an evolution of the scenario, I think is cheapening it a little bit.
Well,
it feels like a much more fleshed out.
It almost feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, it almost feels like the invasions that we're facing now are kind of like, almost like the test of whether or not islands would work or trying to figure out the tech with it. And because you see varied things within those different invasions from time to time.
Sure. So, yeah, well, sure. I mean, it's something we pulled information from, right? It's
sure.
It's one part of something that informed what will become islands, ultimately.
So in the scenario, keep saying scenario, in these island expeditions, the feature set is that you'll go and every time it's different, and there are enough, I forgot the number they said, maybe it was hundreds, but enough objects, items, NPCs, combinations of all that sort of stuff to make it so you really will never be the same island twice ever, no matter how many times
ever.
You run it.
Ever.
That seems challenging
sure.
from a visual composition art perspective. So. Was that a challenge? Was that just simply here are the assets, you put them where you want to put them, and then let technical take over?
Right.
How did that work?
Do they show up and are like, that's what we want to do, good luck?
Right, yeah. Well, there's a lot of granularity in like, you know, saying nothing will ever be the same ever, right? There's a lot of different levels of that. But to me, you know, the perfect marriage of art and design is when we can tell a story visually from an artistic perspective that helps support the goal of design. So to use a non-existing example, if we take an island that has a major ruined castle and two other POIs that are important to overtake, it's from my perspective very important right off the bat to see those, right? And to know, like, from a visual perspective, I don't need an NPC to come tell me, hey, there's a castle that's in some hidden part of the island that you need to go take, and there's some other thing somewhere that you should find to and do something with. I want to just know right off the bat, like, I can tell those are important. And that's all about setting a stage and setting a scene, and visually, right off the bat, giving the players that visual cue of what they need to do. When we said random, I lost control of my bladder, and then started, like, thinking about...
That's your keyword? Yeah. If you say it now, it's a... All right.
So don't trigger me, please, on stage. And then we immediately started talking about, like, how we could do that in a way where we can still maintain that marriage and maintain something that we feel like is a handcrafted experience, but random enough that you feel like you are experiencing something new.
Because you don't want some barrel floating somewhere or accidentally an upside down chest or something. Like, a lot of that may happen in bug testing and early alpha or whatever, but it just seems like it might be complicated thematically to make sure everything looks right. Is there a theme to all the islands that you guys are adhering to then?
I wouldn't say adhering to. Like, they're themed heavily in one direction or another, but it's not necessarily like we set out with five specific biomes that they need to fit into. We actually had an exercise where our level design team went through and they had some time to just take assets that were already existed and mock up, like, what are some cool environmental hits that we could come up with? And they're also passionate about making levels for the game that we couldn't get them to stop. We're like, stop making islands. We need to use the information that you've come up with and now make some decisions about how we're going to approach actually making it as varied as possible.
That makes sense. So the rescaled zones, how many people here, we had a little audience participation on a couple of these. How many of you are excited about rescaled old zones? Probably my favorite thing announced was that. I love old content, and I always feel bad that I don't get to use it in a meaningful way. And even if you're alting or leveling and all, that always kind of felt bad to hit white quests before you were done with stories. All the reasons Ian on stage sort of explained why that didn't feel great. This seems like a great way to go back and do that. So my question for you, Chris, is are you guys doing anything to that old stuff, or is it just going to live as old stuff? The level cap thing happens on the server side stuff, and that's all you have to worry about. Or are you guys going to go tweak any of that? Are we going to get visual flourish out of that?
Man, that is such a slippery slope, and I would hesitate to say one way or the other, yes or no. No, in the sense of we're not going to cataclysm anything. You know, we're not planning on going back and saying, like, let's completely re-envision this area.
Hey, now. Sure. I like cataclysm. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, and I don't mean that with a negative connotation. I mean to illustrate the point of, like, we hold these zones and these areas very dear to our hearts. And to go back to the earlier thing we were talking about of artists coming on the team who grew up playing this game, we're probably the most hardcore when it comes to maintaining the nostalgia that exists, that we experienced I experienced as a fan back in the day. So it's so polarizing, man. Like part of it is, artistically, I have an itch to go back and update everything, but, like, emotionally, I don't want to touch anything.
Right.
So I'm so torn between the two. We will, in areas where it makes sense, like, say if we make a new boar, we're probably going to, and it looks cool, we'll probably go back and, like, propagate the new boar where old boars used to be. But wholesale, let's rework the trees, let's rework the terrain textures, let's rethink this thing, that's not the plan right now.
And you may or may not be able to speak to this, but I wonder about classic servers and whether or not that is going to need your help at all. Or if it sounds like it's the same philosophy. If it, quote unquote, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We have a lot of good feelings for this old content. Obviously, classic's ways away, we have very little details, but as far as you know, are you guys going to have to poke in there and...
It's so early to tell. I don't know the answer to that, man, because I think it'll develop as we go along. Yeah. But right now, it's just there's no way to tell how that's going to roll out.
That makes sense. So, Alliance players.
Oh, there's three people who screamed really loud.
Yeah,
here. Yeah.
And there's
thank you.
Way more of you than I'm comfortable with, but it's fine. just by, I guess we can applaud for this, but I want to see who's planning on playing what allied race. When they hit, and then I want to kind of speak to some of these. So on the Alliance side, we have Void Elves. Who's interested in Void Elves? Light Forge Drain Eye. Got any fans out there? Dark Iron Dwarves look pretty rad.
Those guys look cool. Yeah. Those guys look really, really cool.
I think maybe they won that competition. And on the Horde side, We're thinking about you, Greg Street, Horde side. Anyway, over there we've got Nightborn, me. High Mountain Torin. All right. Very nice. And the Zandalari Trolls. Interesting.
Joss is really excited.
Yeah. I sat next to her on that panel. She was freaking out the entire time.
What's the deal with, I mean, Nightborns, I understand there's stuff like they're hinting about like they're aligning with the Horde, but I worked my ass off to save those little, what the hell, man? It feels...
I know why. Here's why. Alliance, as much as I give you a hard time, you have the best elves now. Blood elves are terrible.
He really doesn't like the blood elves. Like,
it's the only choice we have. I had to make a demon hunter. I understand. I had to make the choice. But I would like some cool, mysterious-looking, wickedy, cool-looking elves.
Well, get ready to keep saying, like, when you play your Nightborn, you're going to be like, an illusion?
Yeah.
What are you hiding? Like,
I'm hoping that won't carry over, but my orc became that every time I was in Suramar, and every time I was in Suramar, I went, you know, I could get used to this. I like how these guys look and animate and feel. So, yeah, I'm stoked about that stuff. I think these all sound great, and they're going to be something there for everybody, and they said they have more planned in the future, so we got a lot to be excited about there. You guys have a favorite that you guys worked on? Like
you guys. So yeah. Speaking for the company in its entirety.
The entire company.
Okay.
No pressure.
Yeah. Man, how do I answer this and stay neutral?
Don't.
Artistically, yeah. Just.
I'm not even going to walk down that road, man.
So you specifically. No, maybe not. That's also slippery.
I'm Horde at heart. And I say that, and in all honesty, it's super important for me to be really neutral when it comes to love for everything, right? So I have Alliance characters. I love both factions dearly. But
it was going to say children. You know, I love both my children.
If you were going to shoot one in the head, which...
Well, before the cinematic, where Anduin became really cool, it might have been an easier choice.
Sure. Yeah.
I'd have to say probably High Mountain Torin are my most favorite, but those have always been dear to my heart.
Well, and why High Mountain instead of the Tonka or some other, I mean, is that a story-based thing or is that...
Because the models look cooler?
Maybe a little bit, sure. But.
I think relevancy to storyline and like everyone just wanted moose antlers.
Yeah, moose antlers are pretty cool.
It did feel like some of those were... pulled forward from Legion because they not only had a lot to do with story, but I think a lot of fan favorites were happening. I know that I know some people disagree with me on this because there's a lot of leveling issues, and I mean like elevation issues in High Mountain, but my favorite zone to quest and request is High Mountain, and I really got attached to those guys, and I thought, man, one day antlers on my character would be pretty cool. I'm not really into the cow phase of Torin's. So let's go full antler would be great. And then so that happened.
You don't like the blood elves. You don't like the actual Horde
Torin's. Back it up. I like female blood elves. Yeah. And so you guys are all fine, whoever's playing female or blood elves. It's the males. And they're
because
cocky,
they're snooty. Just let's
snooty,
be specific
cocky,
here.
French-like attitude.
That's fine. I'll take it. The blood elves are fine.
They'd wear these if they could, you know.
I think the Nightborn elves wear scarves, don't they? Like, it feels like they would be all... I was going to make an unflattering gesture, so maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah, probably not on stage and on the virtual ticket would be a bad idea. But, I just don't like the males. It's probably their laugh. It's probably just the laugh. That's probably the thing. But I like the idea of a more... I don't know. Elves, for me... My favorite kinds of fantasy lore are the ones that are hard to figure out and a little bit weird and kind of dark past and, you know, like Drist and characters like that. That's what I'm into. And so this gives us that finally. Because we just don't have a lot of choices over where we're at. You guys have night elves, which I know are mostly nature-loving, you know, tree huggers and stuff. But they have this great mystery and so much story to tell, and that actually leads me to a question.
Why did you burn the tree?
Yes.
Right.
Well, not
right.
You, not you,
you
know. Specifically. Why did Blit? No.
Which dev was watching Avatar way too much? Really?
I think it might have been the other way around, actually.
All right.
But wait, am I mic'd?
Yeah, we're mic'd. Okay. So when that burned in the video thing, ooh. I went, oh. So a couple things went through my head. One is this sets up great story. So what came first, that or the Lordaeron attack? And I'm very curious to see how that happens. My guess is it'll be very political and hard to tell who started what and a lot of finger pointing, and that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that part of it. But they no longer have a place to go.
Right.
They don't live there anymore, I assume. But part of me hopes it's because guys like you with an eye for overall quality of the game said, the polygons in here are terrible. The tree is made of three sides.
Yeah,
and the leaves
painful.
Look like a nightmare. I mean, 2004, that's where we were.
Yeah.
So you probably can't answer that, but I would love to know if you have any insight on maybe the impact of that. Like, that's a big deal to burn down an entire faction race's homeland,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, we have plans.
Good.
It's not willy-nilly. And, you know, I think the key is we're not going to make anything look bad moving forward. So whatever we do, like, we're going to find a way to keep the story going and interesting. Like, these things have to happen, right? You have to break some eggs. Like, and we can't start a war between these factions and have that heated hatred if, you know, we burnt a tree outside of Teldrassil, like, and, or, right. You know, or...
It's just this little tiny tree.
Like, somebody blew up Brill.
Maybe it was a treant.
You can blow up Brill, it's fine. Brill's not,
yeah, Brill's not great.
But it's interesting because I figured it was mostly for story reasons, because think about it, we as a community, I think we're always asking Blizzard for, all right, we've done demons, now can we have, you know, we're not sure exactly what we want, but we always think we want more faction stuff. Like, it seems like a lot of the stories are like, okay, guys, let's fight. Oh, the Burning Legion. All right, we're friends for a minute. And then they do the Burning Legion. And then they go away. And then you're like, all right, we're fighting each other again. But then there's another distraction. Well, Pandaria was the closest we've gotten to this back to kind of the war that is Horde v. Alliance. But then it became about Azeroth Hitler. And then we all had to fight him together, right? And we agree, he sucked, okay? Alliance, we didn't like him either. But this feels like finally the thing we've been asking for, which is like, let's get back to like that raw, I hate that faction, they hate us, it's complicated. Some of the characters are sympathetic to other ones on the other side, but Jane is still pissed. What?
She's not as pissed. It seems she's calmed down a little
bit. She's resolved now.
Yeah, a little
bit. So what happened is Jaina got bombed, and I understand it's a rough day for Jaina and Theramore. I get it.
A rough day.
A couple of days. Couple of days.
I got it.
It was a poor few minutes. But then she is, her only clickable state in the game right now is she's mad. So if you're Khadgar, shit wizard Khadgar. Sorry. And I click on you go, oh, well met. Thanks for all your hard work. And if you're somebody else, I click on, oh, good evening. It's nice to see you back in Dalaran. I click on Jaina. Freaking, they blew up Theramore. My life is ruined. Right? She's so mad. And Heroes of the Storm, she's, I'm here to help. And back there, she's, I'm here to destroy everybody. So I guess what I was getting at is in order for
yeah,
us
what
to...
what were you getting sorry, at?
In order to get back to where this conflict is really all up in it and matters and feels meaningful, and I think everything we saw yesterday helps contribute to, but what really got me was that burning tree and what was the attack on Lordaeron, because what it means is the stakes are bigger. It isn't just, well, you're an orc and I'm a human and I naturally don't like you and you don't like me.
You see the reasons why you don't
like these are the genuine reasons. Like if Sylvanas led the attack on Teldrassil and destroyed that place.
It's probably going to be because there's like, it's rotting and it's corrupting Azeroth. So, but I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if it keeps being the main antagonist, being the other faction. And that's what we were talking about the other week on the instance, which we're doing now, so on the show. It's, do they take this core tenant of the expansion and bring it to the end, like all of the patches? Because in the beginning of Pandaria, it was also, oh, we hate each other, and then it was like, we all have to come together to fight something. So I'm wondering if it's going to be the same thing here, where over the patches, we're going to unite to fight something else, or if they're actually going to be doing like different experiences through the raids and different like end bosses and stuff like that. So that's going to be interesting to see. But
I told myself I wasn't going to do this to ruin the...
Don't take off your pants, Scott.
No.
Okay.
No, these are well secured. We're good there. But I had this idea that I was going to tell you guys a small detail regarding the cinematic that may not ruin it for you, but you're going to notice it every time. And I've decided to go ahead and do it. All right.
Yeah. Ruin it for everybody.
When Anduin's looking up at the sky and he's calling down the light and he's going full priest mode, this is only in my second viewing, so it wasn't ruined the first time. Not ruined, but you know what I mean. It looks like Brad Pitt saying what's in the box. All right. Just next time you see
Was there any inspiration from that?
That's all we watched. We were all watching
right.
Seven.
Right. Well, all right, let's touch on that for a second. There's a very... the Lordaeron attack feels very, how do I put this, like darker fantasy than normal, than is normal for the game and some of the cinematics. I'd argue the Warlords trailer was also very, you know, there was some darkness.
Well, it's gritty in a different way, right?
Yeah. Different kind of darkness. Yeah. But you were saying something cool backstage, actually kind of about that. That's when we got our new models and you were talking about, well, the approach might be a little different with the cinematic to be consistent with the actual expansion. Go into that a little bit about the models, and then I'll ask my other.
Oh, right. So we were talking about the disparity that exists between the pre-render cinematic and the style of the game, which is a constant conversation topic for myself and the cinematic directors. So if you look back, and what we were talking about is specific to Mists of Pandaria, that was the time where we probably pulled those two visual styles as close together as we ever have before, like the style of the orc and the style of the human. Very specifically the structure that exists of them and not necessarily the rendering. And what's fun about that and how it was relevant to what you're saying is every expansion is unique, and at the beginning of every expansion, we sit down and we have that conversation of how far do we want to push the theme and the style of the cinematic to help drive and inform the content that's in the game and vice versa. So this time around it felt, you know, it needs to be gritty. It needs to be meaningful. I mean, we just watched Varian die, right? And like, this is the first time that we're seeing Anduin really come, like we talked about previously, into his own and follow his own path. And I think you can't just wash past that. And what better way to do it than a pre-render cinematic where we can do things that we can't pull off in game? Like, we're never going to have, I shouldn't say never, but it's very difficult for us to have a moment where with a low poly face, we can pull off that type of emotion. So a vehicle like the cinematics is an excellent place for us to really have that level of storytelling and plant that emotional seed so that we can go into this expansion with that feeling.
Do you get, so when you're working on things like coming together on a consensus for the Lordaeron fight, where do you reach for your own kinds of inspiration? Or in other words, when they're all sort of going through it and you're looking at it, there's got to be stuff you love in the back of your head that's informing what aesthetic you'd like to see. Or at this stage, you've been here long enough, is it just all previous WoW that's all up, you know?
It's a combination of everything, right? But we have some really awesome conversations. And once again, this is, my team doesn't handle the cinematics, so I can't, take credit for the amazing work that they do. They are generous enough to allow us to come in and have points of feedback. So we'll sit down and we'll review storyboards, and then we'll review animatics, and we kind of see it develop along the way. And what's really exciting and fun about that process is that we're not just flies on the wall. We're allowed to, or not allowed to, but we're encouraged to communicate with them in the ways where we're having those conversations. Like, hey, you know, like to give you an example, so Sylvanas, she slides down the siege tower, right, and she goes full Banshee mode. That wasn't something that we set out and said, we want to use this as an opportunity to introduce a new ability that we've never seen from Sylvanas before. That was because of the process that took place when we saw the initial take on what she was doing, which was originally much more downplayed. So it was inspired by some scenes, a lot of scenes that we'd seen from other movies, some Lord of the Rings stuff, and just general kind of, you know, cool fantasy moments of an archer and how they act in combat. But ultimately what happened is we got to a point in the animatic where we all kind of universally were like, it's cool, and she's like taking people out, and like she feels cool, but she doesn't have that edge that makes it like gives you that like, oh, what just happened kind of moment. And through that process is where we really started to go, well, is this an opportunity for us to introduce a new ability? And because of that, the room started talking about what would she do? Like, what would be her kind of Uber attack? And that's what we ended up seeing.
Well, she is the Banshee Queen, after all.
Yeah.
Right.
That's... When she did that Banshee thing, did you all just lose your minds? Oh. I did.
Lost my stuffing.
And all my Heroes of the Storm friends are like, did you see her new ultimate? Did you see her new ultimate? I'm like, I don't think that's, oh, I'll bet it's in Heroes. I'll bet it's in Heroes. It's probably playable at the show floor. I'm like, all right. Good luck to you.
And that For the Horde screen, I mean, it was, people were saying it top Metzen. I mean, it was just like,
oh, which is hard to do.
Right.
And by the way, I have it on some authority that Chris is watching this right now, so we should just say hi to Chris. Everybody, a big clap for Chris.
Hi, Chris.
You know, I feel like when Chris retired, he did it a great time, incredible success with the projects he had just finished and such a legacy of things. And he made a comment that he's left all of these things in incredible hands. And you're one of those guys.
Oh, I hope I can be.
I think you are. Do you miss, though, having his kind of Oracle status guy walking around saying, this is how we're doing it, or what? Not that's how he did it.
I would love it if he was like, nah, he's a dick.
You know, I would joke around if I could, man, but I have so much respect for Chris. And, you know, he's one of the ones that brought me in and brought me under his wing and kind of showed me the ropes and helped me really grow into where I'm at today. And just to set the record straight, no one will ever top his For the Horde. As much as that was amazing, no one will ever top that.
Yeah. I know somebody that actually logged into the game to make sure that their Alliance character didn't automatically just switch.
Yeah. Oh, is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's awesome to hear that. I mean, it's funny you say that. I've heard countless employees say that he took them under their wing, and they're at all these levels. Like, you'll hear that story from Taryn Gregory. You'll hear that story from other creators. And he just
had that
way. Yeah,
that guy's got some big wings.
Yeah, he's alive, though. He's good. He's happy.
Yeah.
Beautiful young child, two-year-old now and all that. So, yeah, we don't want to mourn his loss, but it bears mentioning Chris once in a while, these things.
Well, he just planted the seeds, right? Like, mm-hmm. the seeds he planted are so amazing. And all the original guys, right? Like, it's hard for us. Basically, it's just like, don't mess it up, right? Like, at this point, tend to it, like, help them grow and you know, contribute, and that's what we try to do, but, you know, it's daily just hoping that we can live up to those expectations.
Well, I feel I don't know if you guys agree or not, I think you do, but I feel like Legion was that. Legion was a way of them saying, A, we got this. Any fears we may have had, or if we thought the end of Warlords was a little bumpy or whatever, Legion, to this day, feels like, I say, the best content they've ever produced.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's the surprising thing with Blizzard as a company. I don't know how they do it, but the consistency over, 25 years now? And it keeps being good, even though it's different people doing the you know, I don't know how much of the original WoW team is still there, but I would guess not, you know, a majority. And it's still excellent, and the new games keep being, like, I don't know of any other company in anything, not just in gaming, that manages to keep that level of consistency over that long a time.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing it's because the seeds and the original base, the foundation, is so healthy, and so you know, around the orc, there's the...
aura.
No.
The company...
Shut up!
Oh.
The keywords for the company, like...
The motto.
The English
credo.
Is hard.
Values. What is it?
I'm just going to let him...
The credo.
There you go. But yeah, anyway, so...
There's so many things around orcs. He had to get more specific.
Anyway, Blizzard is cool is what I'm trying to say. Would agree, right?
Well, okay, so to speak to that, because I think that's an important point, is, like, people move on, right? And they leave legacy, and we care deeply about succession. And it isn't just drop the mic and walk out. It's, you know, bring somebody on, train them up, and show them the ropes so that they can treat these projects the way that they should be treated. One of the things that has allowed is like a greater diversity amongst our company, right? And that's huge for us because we realize that if we don't diversify, our games don't get better. And that's something that's continued to make our games better and better. As people have left, we brought in not just replacements, but people who have a very different worldview or a very different view of our games for that matter. And that's only helped to drive every aspect of the things that we do from a creative level to even an engineering level. It's just continues to grow and become better and better because
it is absolutely something to watch from this angle. We're almost out of time. I knew this would go fast, and it bums me out a little bit that it went this fast. But before we do our goodbyes, Chris, I want to thank you so much.
No, thank you guys, man. It's an honor. It's an honor to be here.
Really, really appreciate it. And big thanks to Blizzard for arranging that for us and asking us to do this. We really appreciate it. Yep. Patrick, thank you for being a part of it. Give Patrick a big hand.
Aww.
He is his scarves.
Oh, you.
And the other Pat without the trick. cannot thank Pat enough for stepping in and being part of this today. It made the perfect sense when we thought of him.
Thank you for
so
asking
much.
Me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I guess I just want to say thanks. My family's out here, a lot of friends, fellow podcasters, a lot of community, obviously. We've been doing this show for 12 years. It feels like yesterday. Some people have come, some have gone. I know Randy's in the building. Hopefully he's hearing us right now. I cannot say enough about how much the community means to this show, and it feels like, in a very small way, this is a nice culmination of that goodwill. I hope you guys keep listening. I'm grateful we have games and a game specifically that we can talk about forever. And I'm so fueled up right now to just keep going with this stuff. So your support, your help makes it all worth it. Thank you guys all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening to this. We really, really appreciate it. And another huge thanks to Blizzard for giving us that opportunity. Thanks to Pat, Patrick, certainly Chris Robinson, and another shout out to everyone who else who couldn't be there this year. We really missed all the voices, but it was great to have what we had, and we were happy to do it, and the live crowd was great, and what a BlizzCon. My gosh. I don't have to tell you again. Anyway, we'll be back Friday. Lots and lots and lots of WoW news to sift through, the little things we didn't get to in this panel, certainly stuff we hadn't even heard yet when we recorded it. So there's lots more to talk about. Please come back then and listen live. That's 10 a.m. Mountain Time at frogpants.tv. If you can't catch the show live, it'll certainly be up for podcast listeners right after that. So come back Friday for that. Thank you all once again. What an incredible con that was. It was great to have some of you right along with us. We'll see you guys on Friday. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.